I'm a warm welcome for coming down on, especially this evening, my friend and yours, Chris.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Chris, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Chris.
If you're here tonight, you've proved that you are a mad dog, real alcoholic. And if you're not watching home, watching the Super Bowl. Thank God for DVRs, I can tell you that. A couple weeks ago, when I was here, we went through about half of the chapter 7, Working with Others. You know, what I've been doing for several years now is I've really been using this chapter as kind of a call to arms, to point attention to the detail in this chapter. As an exercise one time, I went through this book, and I had different color highlighters. And I would use one color highlighter for the spiritual principles. I'd use one color highlighter for the promises, and I would use another color for the instructions. And what I found out by doing that exercise is there's almost more instructions in chapter 7 than there are in the book all the way up to chapter 7. There's a massive amount of direction in chapter 7, especially where it concerns engaging the still sick and suffering alcoholic. How do you do that? What is your responsibility? What are some of the steps that you need to take when you are working with a new alcoholic? And I think as a chapter, it's certainly since, you know, around the time I came in, I don't know that anybody was using chapter 7 as a tool to sponsor. Looking back on the way I was sponsored, I don't think the people that were sponsoring me were well acquainted with chapter 7. I think what happened back in those days is they saw the big book as a historical document, something that was written in the 30s, and we've learned a lot more today, and we do it different today. And, you know, I can understand a perspective like that, but from my experience, what I see is that the instructions in this book continue to work. Alcoholism hasn't changed, folks. And, you know, alcoholism is still running rampant through our society. These particular instructions haven't changed in this book either, and they worked in the 30s and they work today. I just had another opportunity. I think I shared one of these a couple weeks ago, but I just had another opportunity that I'm in the midst of setting up. Somebody called me up and said, hey, can you go do a 12-step call in a hospital? Now, I love getting these calls, okay, because usually the person has just something really bad has gone wrong. And when you look through this chapter, it basically tells you that you have a better chance of getting through to somebody when they've just broken the bank, when they've just gotten another DUI, when they're pitifully and incomprehensibly demoralized. And so so one of the things was there was a girlfriend involved. So I get my wife to call up. It says in this book, find out all you can about the person before you go and you do a 12-step call. And we found out that he's just a little bit too sick as of yet to see anybody. I think there was an accident. There was an induced coma. There's different types of tubes down the person's throat. He's in and out of consciousness. It's a little too early to be sending in the boys. But what I did was I assembled a couple of teams, two guys who have a bunch of sponsees, and we're gonna schedule 12-step calls as soon as this person is capable of understanding, you know, what these people will be in the room for. And again, it's using material out of this book. It's using some of the techniques and processes that were used by the early alcoholics. The man on the bed. Everybody's heard about the man on the bed. Well, that's a beautiful time to do a 12-step call. A lot of times when they've been sober and they've gone through a treatment center, they already know. You know those type of people like, I'll tell you what, when you're really hurting and you know you've blown your life up one more time, that's a beautiful time to go there. Another thing that I'm conscious of tonight is is there's an individual here who's it's their first meeting, and here we are, we're on the 12th step. I want to explain a little bit about that. The 12th step is where you get after you've gone through the first 11, and you're placing yourself in a position to be helpful to other people. That's what we're talking about tonight. Now, I want to tell a little story about my last relapse. My last relapse was ugly. It was a multi-day blackout. I did some things during that period of time that I was incredibly ashamed of. It was a bad, bad time in my life around then. And I came out of the DTs and I realized that, I was going to die. I couldn't continue to live experiencing these DTs. And I was also doing incredibly violent things when I was blackout drunk. And I knew I was going to wake up one day in prison for the rest of my life or something. I just knew the writing was on the wall. So I was at that jumping off place where I can't imagine my life without alcohol, because how am I going to escape the burden of being me? And I couldn't imagine living with alcohol the way it was tearing me up. I was at that jumping off place. And so as soon as I could basically get out of the house, I was fish flopping and hallucinating. It was really ugly. As soon as I was sane enough to be able to get out to a car and drive to a meeting, I decided to do that. Now, I had a 1976 Ford Granada. And we're talking 1989 here, right? I had a 1976 Ford Granada with white walls. All the quarter panels were smashed. It had no clutch, just a tiny bit of clutch left, no emergency brake, no heater. It's the middle of winter. You turn on the heater and it would squirt antifreeze on the inside of the window. It was one of those $100 Quaalude cars that we end up with, And everything was broken on it, because we're busy. We can't really, we're not going to go fix a car, We're drinking full time. We're not going to get that. So anyway, so I struggle out to my $100 Quaalude car. And to be able to get to a meeting, I had a meeting book. I had to find a flat meeting because there was no clutch in this car. So it couldn't go up hills, right? It would barely get going on the flat. So I found a flat meeting about 3 miles away from about 5 miles away from where I live. And it was in Morristown, New Jersey, and it was a 6:30 Sunday night meeting, much like this meeting here. And it was a step meeting, and I misread the book. I thought it said a beginner's meeting, but, listen, I was still probably hallucinating. I was probably reading the wrong page, but I got to a meeting. Now, as I drove up to this meeting, there was a little hill to get into the parking lot, and I had no clutch, and I had there was no muffler on this thing either. So I had to gun it just to get up this little hill. And there's a porch with like about 50 alcoholics out having a cigarette before the meeting. And I've got to gun this car. I go, wow! And I go up this hill about a mile and a half an hour, They're all looking, must be a new guy, And I had to park the car against a tree because there was no emergency brake, no clutch. It would roll. So I park it against a tree. And I walk in, and I'm sitting in the back. How we are. We don't want to cause any attention. We don't want anybody looking at us or anything. So I'm kind of in the back, and the meeting starts. And I don't know. I don't understand what's going on. But, I'm like, my head is like, oh, I'm in a meeting. I'm in a meeting. Oh, there's people talking. Blah, blah, blah. And somebody touches me on the arm and hands me a step book, and it's a woman, and she goes, here. At page 72, we're reading from step 12, and I'm like, what? And I look, and she hands me this book, and I look down the row, and each person is reading a paragraph, and they're coming at me. You know what I mean? They're coming at me. I'm gonna have to read, no, I'm gonna read. So I freak out. I get up. and I walk out, you know, and I'm out on the porch and I'm smoking a cigarette. I'm thinking, oh, this is, hey, this is too much. This is to make you read. This is terrible. I'm not going to be able to do it. And this guy, thank God for this guy. He saw me leave. Never forget him. His name is Jorge. And he walked out, and he had a cigarette with me, and he goes, hey, what, hey, bud, you know, I'm Jorge, what's your name? Hey, what's your deal? And I'm like, I'm kind of relapsing, I'm delusional, I got all these, you know, I'm hallucinating, and vomiting, and, you know, guns, and, you know, and he's like, okay, well, why don't you come back in? And I'm like, well, you know, there's a meeting tomorrow, you know, and he's like, no, he knew exactly what tomorrow meant. You know what tomorrow means for people like us when we say we'll do it tomorrow? That means never is what it means. And he knew that. So he goes, he's grabbing my arm. You know, I said, all right, I'll come in. You know, so I go in. The only seats left in the meeting are like in the second row, right in the front. So you know, I feel really weird. You know, we walk up and we sit down and I'm sitting there and, you know, somebody's sharing and I'm like, you know, I'm just like shattered. My mind is going 100 miles an hour. And he taps me on the shoulder and he goes, raise your hand and tell everybody you're coming back. And I'm like, what? He goes, raise your hand and tell everybody you're coming back. I'm like, well, there's a meeting tomorrow night and everybody raises their hand because everybody's coming back. He's like, just raise your hand. And he's starting to get loud. Now people are looking at us. You know what I mean? They're looking at us. And listen, you know what's going to happen soon? If they're looking at you, they're going to be thinking at you soon. You know? I had to do something. So I've never seen this before. Never seen it after. Right in the middle of somebody sharing, I put up my hand because he told me to read it. And the chairperson is like really confused. They're like, and they shut the person up who's talking. And they call on me. I guess they think it's important, right? And I say something. It's Chris. I'm calling. I've been vomiting. I'm calling everybody. But the maggots are crawling all around. I'm insane. There's guns and everything. I'm going to come in there and thank you. And the place is dead quiet, right? And then all of a sudden, everybody starts going, yeah! And they just start cheering, you know? And I'm like, oh, my God. And I took it as approval at that point in time. I now know what it really was. It was like, you pathetic son of a bitch. Thank you so much for sharing. I came here tonight with some problems, and I'm listening to you, man. I'm grateful now. You know, thank you for sharing. You know, but I took it as approval. And what it was with new people, there is a wall of self-centered fear. It's anxiety. It's like, I don't know if I can do this. I don't feel comfortable with all these people. I don't feel comfortable doing this stuff, you know? And being able to raise my hand in the middle of that meeting and tell everybody I'm coming back, that little effort was enough to knock a hole in that wall of self-centered fear. And I was able to come to a meeting the next night and the next night and the next night. And for my first 8 years, I went to a meeting like every night. I mean, I had nothing better planned, folks. You know what I mean? I didn't come here winning awards. You know, I was one of those pathetic alcoholics. So anyway, the reason I tell that story is because, you know, my first meeting was a 12-step meeting. And it was a very significant moment for me. I was able to start, you know, my recovery journey that night. It was also a night where a lot of people would not normally go to a meeting. It was New Year's Eve. There was a bunch of people at that meeting, and I was eternally grateful that they were. I was glad that they weren't all off at some New Year's party. Who knows where I would have been if that was the case. All right, I'm going to pick it back up from a couple weeks ago. We're halfway down page 96. Again, up to page 96, we go all the way up to and basically through the first visit. The first time we engage an alcoholic, what are we supposed to do? I'll tell you what I've been prepping the teams for, you know, when they go to the hospital in the next couple of days. To tell their story and to be willing to answer questions. not to try to talk the alcoholic into anything, not to try to get them to go to a meeting, none of that stuff. Just share your experience, strength, and hope, answer some questions, and then leave, and then let somebody else go in and do the same thing. The time and the place will come when there can be an engagement where somebody's going to start to work with that individual, start to take them through the steps and start to offer them, the opportunity of a home group and things like that. But basically, this chapter lays out what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to tell them what happened. What happened? You know, what was your drinking like? What happened? Why did you stop? How did you stop? And we're supposed to answer some of those questions very specifically. And this book also says, please don't do this kind of work unless you have this experience. So in other words, really what it's saying is, don't go on 12-step calls if you haven't gone through all 12 steps. Because what you're going to be carrying half a message or a quarter of a message. You know, what this book is basically saying is, tell them how you straightened out the past, how you did step 9. Tell them how you did a fourth and a fifth step and started to examine the wreckage. Tell them how you turned your will and your life over, or you decided to turn your will and your life over to the care of God. These are things that are supposed to be explained if the person is interested in how you got sober. So here we are, halfway down 96. Suppose now you are making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he's prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Because you've explained how you went through the 12 steps, the individual needs to be willing to do what you did. So now they're saying, okay, I'm ready to go through the 12 steps. Are they saying, okay, I'm now ready to go to a meeting? No, they're saying, I'm now ready to go through with the program of recovery. Very, very different. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Having had experience yourself, meaning, please have gone through the 12 steps before you do this. Otherwise, what's going to happen is you're going to be telling them, hey, there's a great meeting. They've got really good coffee and donuts. Come and hear people share. That's quite a different message than how about a recovery from alcoholism? How about being recovered from alcoholism? How about knowing a new life and a new happiness and a new perspective on the world? How about not being uncomfortable with yourself and your environment? How about getting rid of self-centered fear, depression, anxiety, guilt, shame, and remorse? How about exiting all that stuff? That's a much more powerful meeting than come to me to the open discussion meeting. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision. What's the decision? It's step 3. And tell his story. What is that? That would be his step 5. But do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. He may be broke or homeless. If he is, you might try to help him about getting a job. I've done that. Give him a little financial assistance. I don't do a whole lot of that, but sometimes I will. That's a tricky one. A lot of times when you do certain things, you make it more difficult for the person to get sober. Like if you're going to pay their mortgage for a year or something, that's going to enable them to get drunk faster. But there are certain times when it is appropriate to offer a couple bucks. But you should not deprive your family or creditors of the money they should have. Perhaps you will want to take the man into your home for a few days. We've done this. My wife and I have done this over the course of time. And you have to be careful doing that as well. You don't want to be enabling the person to not become self-supporting through their own contributions. Being self-supporting through your own contributions is a spiritual principle too. And to help someone avoid that is just like helping somebody to avoid a fifth step or amends. It's not something that you want to do. Be sure you use discretion. Be certain he will be welcomed by your family and that he is not trying to impose upon you for money, connections, or shelter. Permit that and you only harm him. You will be making it possible for him to be insincere. You may be aiding in his destruction rather than in his recovery. You know, it's funny. My wife and I are working with somebody right now. We were able to get him into primary treatment, and we've got some plans for what's going to happen after that. There's a number of really good recovery centers around the country where it's like big book, you know, big book focused. It's not clinical treatment. It's like big book God stuff. And they seem to have some really good outcomes. So we're working on that. But my wife is working on the kid's mom. Maternal instinct is such that, oh, you're hurting? Let me give you some money. Let me cook you a steak. Let me make your bed. Okay? That's maternal instinct. And it's absolutely appropriate unless you're dealing with an alcoholic. You know what I mean? Listen, things that are good for normal people are terrible for an alcoholic. Okay, somebody wins the $1 million lottery. That's good for a normal person. That'll kill an alcoholic. Because that'll enable them not to have to trust God. You know, they'll have all this money. Knowing the police in town so you don't get tickets, that's probably a good thing for a normal person. That could kill an alcoholic. That would enable them to drive drunk and not have to worry about it. So what happens is there's certain things that contribute to enabling. And this one woman is just a beaut. She's a beaut, you know. She's doing everything wrong. And we'll explain, okay, you shouldn't do that. You should do this. Okay, I got it. And the kid will call and, you know, she'll go completely in the opposite direction. You can love somebody to death.
Yeah.
And that's not what you want to do. Listen, sometimes it's going to take the hard choices. Sometimes it's like, look, I'm done with you. Don't call here. Don't look for money. You know, you're in jail. You're looking for somebody to bail you out. Oh, you don't really have to worry. I'm good with, you know, I don't need to bail anybody out. You know, you got yourself into that. You can get yourself out. Making hard decisions like that sometimes promotes recovery. You know, helping people out sometimes doesn't. My first sponsor was very wise. He said, Chris, never put a pillow under them when they're on their way down. And that's a very, very true statement. Allow them the dignity of experiencing the ramifications of their own actions. You know what I mean? And I'm all about allowing people that dignity to them. And you know what? When they're really willing, like, you know, to get better, I'm there. Never avoid these responsibilities, but be sure you're doing the right thing. If you assume them, helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. So you've gone through the first 11 steps. The foundation of your recovery is going to be continued work with other alcoholics. You need to plan on continuing to help alcoholics the rest of your life. If you do that, your chances of staying sober and happy have just multiplied by 100-fold. I am telling you, if you're an alcoholic and you continue to help other alcoholics, your life is going to be great. If you find that all the things that Alcoholics Anonymous has given you is taking you away from AA and you disappear from AA, that can end up in a disaster. I can't tell you how many people that's happened to that I know of. They've gotten a great life and meetings. I got some other stuff I got to do. And pretty soon they lose everything that they've built up. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You have to act a good Samaritan every day if need be. It may mean the loss of many nights' sleep. That happens to us. Greater interference with your pleasures. Absolutely. Interruptions to your business. I get calls all day long. I try to put in a 9 or a 10 or an 11 hour day, you know, so I'm giving them their dime for their nickel. But I do get calls during the day. It may mean sharing your money, your home, counseling frantic wives, and relatives, innumerable trips to the police, courts, sanitariums, hospitals, jails, and asylums. Your telephone may jangle at any time of the day or night. Believe me. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. A drunk may smash the furniture in your home or burn a mattress. You may have to fight with him if he is violent. I love that one. I tell all my sponsees, I want you in martial arts classes because, you know, some people need a meeting, some people need a beating. Sometimes you will have to call a doctor and administer sedatives under his direction. That's the one thing I don't do, folks. I had some bad luck administering sedatives in the past, you know, and I don't have to relearn that lesson. But what I did say is a couple weeks ago, I said the airline bottles, you know, if we go on a wet drunk call or something, we'll get some of those airline bottles. They're perfect for 12-step calls. You don't want to bring a quart or something, you know. You get them, just give them enough so they don't go into the DTs and you can get them into detox. Another time you may have to send for the police or an ambulance. Occasionally you will have to meet such conditions. We seldom allow an alcoholic to live in our homes for long at a time. It is not good for him, and it sometimes creates serious complications in a family. Though an alcoholic does not respond, there's no reason you should neglect the family. You should continue to be friendly to them. And, you know, we certainly do that. One of the great things after this book was written, one of the greatest things was Al-Anon. You know, Al-Anon, there are some really strong Al-Anon groups, and there are some that aren't, kind of like, you know, the AA meetings. But there are some really, really experienced Al-Anon people, and you can really call on them. For a long period of time, I would always engage in Al-Anon in some of the 12-step work that I would do. And they would be there for communication with the family. I would be there for communication with the alcoholic. And we're, you know, my wife and I are in the process of doing that, you know, this weekend with somebody. So the family, remember, the family can help or hurt. Sometimes they need the information to know which is which because, you know, they don't know. The family should be offered your way of life. Should they accept and practice spiritual principles, there's a much better chance the head of the family will recover. I love that. That's a great sentence. You know, sometimes a family member will get into Al-Anon before the alcoholic will stop drinking. When they become a serious Al-Anon member, it's the death knell of the alcoholic. I heard this one person sharing one time, and she was saying, you know, my husband, like the family be freaking out on him. He'd do some stupid thing, and what he would do is he would fall down on the floor and he'd pretend he was dying, you know, and everybody would stop yelling at him, and you know, can we get you another drink? And you know, he would turn the tables. She goes, since I've joined Al-Anon, he'll fall down on the floor like that, and I'll vacuum around him. You know, just beautiful. And even though he continues to drink, the family will find life more bearable. And that's true. You know, there are a lot of Al-Anons out there where people are still drinking. And you know what? They become detached from the pain and the disorganization and dysfunctional nature of the alcoholism. And they see it as apart from. They see the person as ill, like you would see someone ill with, you know, cancer or something like that. And they stop taking things personally. For the type of alcoholic who is willing and able to get well, little charity in the ordinary sense of the word is needed. The men who cry out for money and shelter before conquering alcohol are on the wrong track. Yet we do go to great extremes to provide each other with these very things when such action is warranted. This may seem inconsistent, but we think it is not. It is not the matter of giving that is the question, but when and how to give. And that has you have to understand what's going to help and what's going to hurt. And you'll do that with experience. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. What he means by service plane there, it's not like what we consider service in Alcoholics Anonymous today. What he's saying is when the alcoholic needs money, give him money. When they need food, give him food. When they need shelter, give him shelter. No, you want to help them get back on their feet, but you shouldn't be doing anything for them that they should be doing for themselves. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence upon God. Burn this, burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. You know, trusting in God, that's basically 1, 2, and 3. Cleaning house is basically 4 through, I'd say, 11. Talks in here about the domestic problem. A lot of times there are domestic problems. You know, sometimes we're involved, but we try to stay out of the fights. You know, we'll make an exception if there's abuse or there's you know, there's children that are endangered or whatever. You know, and we'll step in and try and do more than just the 12-step call if something like that happens. But you really need to stay out of people's fights. I learned this the hard way. It's basically this, okay, somebody comes up to you and they're going through the steps or whatever, and my wife, I can't, she's going to, I'm going to drink if I stay with my wife, you know, what do you think I should do? Well, if you say you should leave them, and they don't leave them, you've lost. If you say to stay, you know, they're going to blame you on all the ramifications of staying. It's like a no-win situation. It doesn't really work to take a stand on that. So basically what we try to do is we try to focus the person back on their own spiritual journey, on their own spiritual exercises that they need to be taking, you know, within the steps. And basically say, you know, everything should work out. I remember going to my first sponsor with the weight of the world on me. I remember going over there one time saying, you know, there's this person caught up with me, and they're sending over these people that are going to break my knees. You know, these are some crazy people. You know, I got to get money, and my driver's license. I'm going to lose my driver's license, and my job. I can't get my job. I hate my job. And I'm expecting my sponsor to coach me through all this stuff, right? You know what he does? You know what he does? He goes, Chris, do you pray?
No doubt.
I'm like, what? What does that have to do with what does that have to do? They're going to break my knees. You know, and he's like, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to a meeting. And I'm like, don't you get it? Today, I see exactly what he was doing. The guys that were going to come over and break my knees were a symptom. Me losing a job was a symptom. My driver's license was a symptom of my alcoholism. Working on those symptoms is a waste of time. He wants me to work on the core condition, which is my alcoholism, which gets treated by prayer and meetings and steps. It was just very, very hard for me to understand what the hell he was doing. I thought he was dumb. You know, the only reason I stuck with him is because he was right about everything. Everything he told me to do, everything he told me that was going to happen, always happened, you know. So I thought, you know, I better do what he says. It doesn't make any sense, but I better do what he says. Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. This just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. I was in that case. I remember coming into my first big book meeting and seeing the chapter to wives and the family afterward. I'm like, how about the chapter to the wife who left me when I needed her most and the family that abandoned me? Where are those chapters? You know, you guys got it wrong. I am so grateful today that everything happened the way it did. You have no idea. I'm so grateful I didn't get back what I had. Oh man. Sometimes you don't see. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon other people. It's dependent upon his relationship with God. Bill Wilson does this every single time. When there's something important for you to understand, he tells you what he's going to tell you, then he tells you, and then he tells you what he told you. You know, there are at least three times in here he's basically telling you that the new person's ability to recover is going to be based on his relationship with God. We've seen men get well whose families have not returned at all. We've seen others slip when the family came back too soon. But this is a great paragraph. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. I love this. You know, if we want someone to work with us, we have to have an attractive life. There's got to be a reason for the person to want to work with us as a sponsor. There has to be something attractive about us. And you know what? We, as alcoholics, we can pick up on hypocrisy a mile away. We are so attuned to hypocrisy. We have hypocrisy antennas. And if somebody's telling you to do something that they haven't done themselves or they're not going to do themselves, we can smell that a mile away. So, you know, you need to be willing to do everything that you're telling other people to do. You need to have experience where you're sharing your experience. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Now, another thing that I have an issue with in some meetings is when they read the 12 promises and they preface it like that. This is one of the best promises in the book. Listen to this promise. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Anything we could have planned. It's going to be better than anything we can plan on day one. Our life is going to be better than any possibility that we can plan. It's going to be better than. And this has been my experience. You know, when I first walked through the door, I would have been happy with being able to stay separated from alcohol. I'd have called that a win. You know, but I can't tell you how much I've gotten besides that. You know, I have a whole new life. I've got an incredible life. And I not only am I comfortable with myself and my environment, I'm grateful for every minute I spend on this planet. It's a complete new perspective on life. You know, I had a dark, complicated, you know, pathetic perspective on life when I was out there drinking. You know, today I'm ridiculously happy most of the time. It's crazy. Follow the dictates of a higher power and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world no matter what your present circumstances. And this has been true in my case too. A new and wonderful world. When working with a man and his family, you should take care not to participate in their quarrels. I absolutely try not to do that. If you've been successful in solving your own domestic problems, tell the newcomer's family how that was accomplished. Again, I'm always sharing my experience. You know, we grow by shared experience. We don't grow by advice. Okay? Somebody wants to give you advice. I mean, how much advice have we had out there? You know, we don't want to hear advice. But I'll tell you, we will listen to experience. You know, so remember to share your experience. When someone is telling me that the IRS is after them, I don't go, well, what you should do. What I'll do is, I know a bunch of people who've had to make it right in their ninth step with the IRS. I'll ask them to go talk to them. If someone has a situation that is pretty close to something I've had, I will share my experience. I'll share what happened, you know, what I did, what the results were, and, you know, listen, I'm sharing my experience. A lot of times we don't want to hear advice. In this way, you can set them on the right track without becoming critical of them. The story of how you and your wife settled your difficulties is worth any amount of criticism. Assuming you are spiritually fit, you can do all sorts of things that alcoholics are not supposed to do. Now, here are some really cool promises. You know, you want to go to a meeting and they ask for a topic sometime. Throw some of these promises out and just watch the fireworks. Because these promises are basically saying that we can have alcohol in our house, we can be around drinking people, we can go to whoopee parties, which are basically drinking parties, we can be in bars. We can do a lot of things that people would not really expect us to be able to do. But again, Bill Wilson tells you what he's going to tell you. He tells you, and then he tells you what he told you. And at least three times in here it says, if we're spiritually fit and our motives are good, we can do these things. If we are spiritually fit and our motives are good. Do not try any of this stuff if you've not gone through the steps. Do not try any of this stuff if you have not had a spiritual awakening as the result of the 12 steps. A lot of times when you're new, I see this happen a lot. I remember I was working with this one guy. He's brand new, you know, and I've got him going to meetings, and I've got, you know, I'm trying to get him over to my house to take him through the steps, you know, and I'm talking to him, and I'm like, look, you know, we really got to get it together. Yeah, I know, man. I go, okay, Thursday night is the night I meet with people. I want you over to my house on Thursday night. And he's like, oh, wow, man, Thursday? You know, I'm getting ready for the tour. I tour with the dead every summer, and I'm getting ready for the tour. And, you know, man, I'd really like to be over there on Thursday night, but, you know, I can't really make it because I've got some plans. You know, it's like, oh, my God, unbelievable. Tour with the dead, you're going to be dead, you know? This guy, his life is, the fire from his life is right behind him. I mean, you know, unbelievable what he blew up. And, you know, but everything's okay now, man. I'm gonna go tour with the dead. And, listen, we need to be spiritually fit. Do you know what? In the Grateful Dead concerts, there was the yellow balloon section. You know what that was? Those are the sober deadheads. And you can go tour with the dead. You just need to get some experience. You need to get some recovery behind you. And then you can go there and you can enjoy. You can dance and you can listen to the music and you can hang under the yellow balloons. And you can even have meetings, you know, in between the encores. But to go to two meetings and then run off and tour with the dead was insane. And I never saw this guy again. Who knows what happened? It's our belief that any scheme of combating alcoholism which proposes to shield the sick man from temptation is doomed to failure. Again, if access to alcohol was our trigger, you know, when I was driving here, I saw three places that you could buy alcohol right off of the parkway. You know, we're in big trouble if access is what we have to protect ourselves from. Because there's a big world out there. You can't go anywhere without bumping into drugs and booze these days. What we have to do is we have to be spiritually fit so that we react sanely and normally, like we see a bottle of booze and it's like a rattlesnake. It's like, I see it there, it's very pretty, but I can't pick it up. You know what I mean? That's how you react when you're sane and normal. I can't put that stuff in my body, it's not a good idea. You've been restored to sanity because of these steps. Why we relapse is because of those subtle forms of insanity, the strange mental blank spots that happen prior to us taking a drink. For one reason or another, we allow ourselves to put alcohol back in our body in an unrecovered state. You go through these steps, you've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. You're not swearing off alcohol. The problem's been removed. You think you react sanely and normally. Those are 10-step promises. And those promises will remain in effect throughout your life if you pay really close attention to step 12. Because step 12 is where we grow in effectiveness and understanding. We need to continue to grow in effectiveness and understanding to maintain our spiritual condition. Because there's no resting on our laurels. We can't coast in neutral. We have to continue to work a spiritual program. One of the biggest mistakes people make is they come into AA, they do a 90 and 90, and then they start to back away and they start to put less and less effort into recovery and AA. Let me tell you something. I'm in my 24th year now, a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I do more this year than I did last year because I know what alcoholism is. It's progressive. So I have to progress spiritually. I have to do more this year than I did last year. It's different. I may not go to more meetings, but I'm putting more into my recovery. I'm putting more into my spiritual growth. And I know I need to continue to do this. And you know what? If you ever see me stumbling around, drunk out of my mind, out on the road, and don't think that that's not possible, if you ever do, right, you don't even need to ask me what I did wrong.
I failed to perfect and enlarge my spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others. That's why we relapse. We don't relapse because she left. We don't relapse because she stayed. We don't relapse because we lost the job. We don't relapse because we got the job. We relapse because we failed to perfect and enlarge our spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others. That's what kills us as recovered alcoholics. Your job is now to be at the place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. The phone can ring, folks, and it can be some idiot that needs a ride to a meeting or a ride to a detox, or it's 10:30 at night, and you know what? You can think that, I don't need this crap. I'm going to hang up this phone. You can think that. Or you can also think, I'm not going to get in my car. I'm not going to go drive that person to a detox. I'm not going to take them to the meeting. I'm not going to tell them more about step four. You can think that, but what you have to do is say yes. You have to get in your car. When the hand of AA reaches out, we need to make sure that it's always there. Listen, sometimes, folks, we can't do it. We need to have a team of people. We need to have a crew that we can count on, because sometimes we might not be in town. Sometimes we actually physically can't go do that, but we need to make sure that it can get done. We need to have a crew that we can count on. You should not hesitate to visit the most sorest spot on earth on such an errand. My wife and I went to a crack house, to pull somebody out who was chirping like a squirrel. We went in there, and all the ceiling had been peeled open, looking for the cameras. You know what I mean? You know the peepers, the crack guys. We will go, and we will do this stuff. We will do it. You are safe and protected. You're on a mission from God. You're like the Blues Brothers. You're good. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives, and God will keep you unharmed. That's a great, great promise. Someday we hope that Alcoholics Anonymous will help the public to a better realization of the gravity of the alcoholic problem. Today it's, I don't know, there's a lot of bad information out there today, folks. A lot of bad information. I wish our public policy programs were better. But people think what they think. And I'm telling you, I've never seen anything work better than 12-step fellowships for addiction and obsessive compulsive disorders and, all those things. I've never seen anything work better. But you don't make much money on church basements for a dollar. So there's a lot of stuff out there being pushed in all kinds of different directions that's helpful. We should be helpful with our friends. We should understand where a good doctor, good psychiatrist or whatever can help. But we should also know that we're the last line of defense for a lot of people. I'm sponsoring a guy that was in 17 rehabs. Okay, where do you think he finally got well, folks? Do I even need to say? So sometimes we're the last line of defense. After all, our problems were of our own making. Bottles were only a symbol. Besides, we have to stop fighting anybody or anything. We have to. What a great paragraph there. Bottles are a symbol. You know why bottles are a symbol? Because we have a spiritual malady. With a spiritual malady that can be treated with alcohol. It's a bad treatment, though. When we come in here, we learn how to treat our spiritual malady through spiritual living and spiritual exercises. That's what the treatment for alcoholism is. I for one am grateful for the people who did 12-step work on me. I, for one, am grateful for the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm grateful for the book Alcoholics Anonymous with the steps in it. And you know what? Every single promise in this book is manifested in my life in one way or the other. And I'm grateful to be here tonight. Thank you very much.